Hello and welcome to The Geek Embassy Reads Stormfront. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here today with Evan, Dante, and Isabella. And we are reading the first installment of the Dresden Files series. It's a series, yes?
It is a series.
Yes. By Jim Butcher. And I don't remember if we shared on air that we were going to do this. I can't remember now. Or if it's just what we talked about after.
I think you hinted at the book club.
Okay.
But I don't think we said what we were doing.
We didn't actually talk about what we were going to read. Okay, so this is the third in sort of the series that I'm starting of shows focused on different areas of geekdom, where we do the Geek Embassy watches, and we've done Game of Thrones and The Handmaid's Tale and a bunch of movies over the summer. And we did the Geek Embassy plays, Pathfinder. And if you haven't watched or listened to all those, you should listen to them all, because that fight at the end makes every minute of it worthwhile.
Like, good.
So much fun. So cool. And so this is the Geek Embassy Reads, where we're going to do like book reviews and talking about books that we've all read together as a group. And so when I came up with the idea for this, this was literally Evan and Dante like bouncing off the walls, talking about wanting to talk about this book and this series.
I mean, because it's only the best book series ever written.
The best book series ever written.
Is the better wizard named Harry. I'm just going to say that.
Better than a wizard named Harry?
He is the best wizard named Harry.
He is the best wizard named Harry. All right. All right. So with that note, we should just put the disclaimer in that we will be spoiling the entirety of the first book of the Dresden Files. Stormfront is the first in the series. There are how many books now, guys? 14 or 15, something like that. So there's a lot of them. Jim Butcher's been very prolific. So we are going to talk in depth about the first book in this episode. So if you don't want it spoiled, I'm sorry, because we're going to spoil it. And I'm hoping it came out in 2000, so it's been out for 17 years. So
basically, shame on you for not.
And it was one thing, like, I knew nothing about it before you guys suggested it. I hadn't heard of it. It wasn't something that was on my radar at all. So I was delighted.
It's got kind of a cult following.
It does. And that I've learned actually with some of my students this semester, because one of my students listed the Dresden Files as like a favorite book series in the introduction that we did at the start of class. And I'm like, oh, hey, I just finished book one. And he's like, yeah, you got to kind of trudge through the first couple of books, but I promise you it gets so good when you get into it. So that would be my first question for you guys. Do you feel like the first couple of books, like the first two books, are a little slower moving than the rest of them end up being?
I think the first few books are definitely different in a lot of different ways, like tonally, in terms of like he's figuring out how this universe works. Like you can notice there's some things that kind of happen in the first couple books that kind of eventually get kind of like aspects of how magic works and like aspects of how like the magical world works that kind of get distanced away from the main storyline of the overarching plot arc. Because he's kind of, you can sort of tell he's sort of changed his mind about how he wants certain things to be after he already started. And it's probably not until, I think he himself said Death Masks, which is the fifth book.
It's the fifth.
Either Death Masks or Summer Night is the one where he kind of felt himself that he kind of got into the feel of what the series is going to be going forward.
And okay, so that's the fifth book. Okay.
Like, you can tell from then on. But he's, like, every single one of his books I love. Like, they're all fantastic. It's just, he's kind of still figuring out. It's like the first few, like, the first season of any show.
Right. Still kind of feeling. I always refer back to like the first season of Buffy, because you could definitely see how they were just trying to figure out what they were doing.
A like next generation before Riker got his beard. He wasn't as cool.
Before Riker got his beard. Before and after beard.
I mean, that's a true statement.
That's hilarious.
The Tasha Yar years and the Worf years.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I agree with everything Evan said. It is a slow build, mostly because Butcher didn't know, you know, how much of the story he was going to be able to tell. He was really focused on making sure that he had a clear beginning, middle, end, and you'll see that through the first three or four books. And then really once you get up to Death Masks, where he's chasing the Shroud of Turin around, it's not really a spoiler because you can read it on the back of the book.
Yeah.
And once you get past there, like, everything starts tying itself together. It's kind of like, you know, after Goblet of Fire. You know,
right, where all the tapestry starts to kind of like piece together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's around the time that the series started to actually start building up steam. Because it was pretty popular, as I recall. Like, I didn't get into it until a lot later than its
popularity. First four books came out in two years. Stormfront's 2000, Full Moon is 2001, Grave Peril's 2001. Summer Night is 2002, and then it looks like it's almost every year
until the last one that came out.
We March had one. 2015. Yeah.
You'll know what that's doing to me. Yeah. The last one was
terrible.
But there were so many like cliffhangers in the one before that didn't really get picked up. Like the last one, that Skin Game was in a lot of ways kind of a filler book. And like, it was amazing. I loved it. It's a heist story, and I love those. But I had so many questions left over from Cold Days that he still hasn't addressed.
Still hasn't answered.
And it's making
There are still questions left over from Ghost Story that I haven't been answered.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's not get too much ahead of ourselves here. I did want to kind of put it in context that this is the first book in a much larger world, and that I had heard that the first book kind of starts off kind of slow, or the first few books, until you kind of catch the momentum of it. But let's head back to actually talking about Stormfront, and just remind Isabella that she's actually muted right now, if you're wondering why you haven't. There you go.
Okay. Sorry, there was barking and yelling on my end, so...
Yes, if anybody ever wondered, we do all record these from home on our free time. Well,
because occasionally Isabella just starts barking and yelling.
Yes.
I mean, it all happens sometimes.
You know, it does happen sometimes. All right, so Isabella and I are the only ones who have only read the first, well, I've started the second book, but we're the two that are sort of new to the series. So Isabella, what are you thinking? What were your first impressions? Etc.
Well, I was actually a little bit familiar with the world because I had seen the show. Well, I had seen some of the show.
There was a show. Yep, starring Paul Blackthorne.
Okay.
Who you will know.
Actually, my mom loved this show.
Okay.
She watched it. She watched it for a while, actually, until it...
Well, yeah, I mean, it only lasted 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was really into it.
It was good for what it
she
was.
She liked the actor. But, yeah.
For what it did. It did what it was.
It was good for
to.
What it did. I mean, okay. And they, you know, and just for reference, like, they did the entirety of Stormfront in literally one episode.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, literally one episode.
I'm trying to even.
Well, I mean, if you.
I guess you could boil it down.
If you really wanted to, like, give a complete story, you couldn't. Because it's a pilot.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
You would have to do the whole story. You couldn't just open on him.
Right.
You know, trying to make up rent and then that's it. That's it.
Right.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
You know, it was jarring for someone who is a big fan of the series to see, like, oh, look at that. This is the one book that they've got in 40 minutes.
They changed so much Like, it, other than that episode, I think, like, I haven't seen the whole show because I just got so turned off of how different it was, because it was just, like, so jarring. It's not really the same.
Yeah, but, more using the properties and trying to.
Yeah, it's, even I think in his own words, it was kind of like a parallel universe version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bob's not a skull, he's like a ghost, and, like, Karen
Murphy's not blonde.
First name is Connie, and just all kinds of weird,
bizarre
things they do.
Weird things that you would change.
Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of Karen Murphy as one of our characters, the police detective that he works with. Special Investigations Detective. The series takes place in Chicago, for those who aren't unfamiliar. And the first story, that was one of the things that gripped me, at least from the beginning, was this, the crime at the beginning of the first book. Oh my goodness. Like,
I mean, he doesn't pull any punches.
No. And I was not expecting, like, I knew it was, you know, was sci-fi, and it was, you know, there were different creatures, and I knew a little bit. I know a little bit from y'all about what's coming down the line in the series. But I didn't expect quite such, I don't want to say gore, because it wasn't gore, but like such a, like,
it is pretty gory.
It is.
How is it not gory?
Yeah, I guess it is.
I mean, do you want to explain what happens? Like, give some context?
There were a whole bunch of puppies, and they were playing with several kittens. It was adorable.
And there were gifts all around. No, okay, so he gets called in on a case by Karen, and two people who are...
copulating.
Copulating. I was gonna say it's like the worst case of coitus interruptus ever. Like, ever.
The truth.
The worst case of coitus interruptus ever. And so as they are having sex, their hearts are torn out of their bodies, like out of their chests,
like full on Kali Ma. Like, it's great.
Yeah, like you know, and he's seeing the blood and the, you know, and the whole thing and all this. So.
And he vomits.
And he vomits.
They specifically tell him that he's going to need a bucket.
Yes.
He needs the bucket.
Yes, he needs the bucket, which is, you know, I'm sure an homage to Monty Python a little bit, too.
Yeah, likely.
That's one of those things, too, though, that scene and those scenes in particular in this book, that's also kind of a symptom of kind of the change in tone. Because this book, I think, overall is a lot gorier and a lot more kind of R-rated than almost every other book in the series, which is kind of weird to start off from that point.
Yeah,
like, moments here and there where it gets dark and gritty and stuff like that, but I would say, like, of all the books, this one's R, most of the rest are just PG-13.
That's interesting. Maybe he, and that probably might have had something to do, like you said, with him finding his tone, but also maybe finding the audience for it as well, and kind of seeing what they responded to, because it was, I was not expecting it. And I'm, and, you know, as we all know, I'm a little better reading things that are scary because my mind just edits the details out. I don't see things as, you know, bloody as they might be portrayed. So I didn't have, like, the trouble that I would have, like, you know, as anybody who listens to the podcast and who's been watching the, or listening to the Geek Embassy watches, everybody's been trying to get me to go see It, and it is not happening.
It will never happen.
Never, ever, for that reason. So it was a little, you know, it's like, well, I wonder if this is going to, and it did give me some weird dreams, but not the kind of dreams that, like, torture me the way that some scary things do. So, yeah. So that's where we walk in on Harry Dresden's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now that you've mentioned It, I'm never going to sleep tonight. Thank you.
Sorry.
I have a feeling you're just gonna like pass out after
yeah,
this is
I think year. So too.
I literally just woke up 15 minutes ago.
Oh, nice.
What are you doing? He's in the East Coast. Dante's traveling. If anyone's wondering why his camera isn't on, he's yes. not here. So he's yeah, joining us very late at night, just like mm-hmm. Evan is always joining us late at night. But it's Evan's time zone, which is a little different.
Yeah, we live up in these parts.
Yes. So, all right. So we open with this scene. And so essentially, the rest of the book is trying to solve not just this, there are other murders that happen in the same way with the mm-hmm. same. MO, and it is trying to Dresden is kind of pulled in to help kind of figure this out. Now, what we should explain about Harry is that he is a professional wizard.
The only opening practicing.
The only practicing. Yes, professional wizard in Chicago.
He's in the Yellow Pages.
He's in the Yellow Pages.
As far as he's concerned, he's the only openly practicing wizard in country, let alone Chicago.
Okay. I don't think I remembered that, but yeah, that basic, that, so he's the only, like, I guess in this world, they understand that magic is a thing, but most people don't believe that it is.
It's generally more or less, we're kind of led to believe that their world is the same as our world. Like, he's just, like, he's in the Yellow Pages as a wizard, and like, people are like, oh, that's fine, there's a guy in there listed as a wizard, yeah, whatever. And like,
right.
The idea is people kind of brush it off. They don't think
right.
It's
well, yeah, he explains, like, if you turn to the phone book, his phone book still exists this time.
So definitely not our world.
and go to wizard. He's the only entry in there.
Right.
And everyone, like his mailman, like, looks at it and scoffs and is like, are you serious?
Right.
You're joking, right?
Or they think he's a party magician.
Or he's a party, like a kid's magician or something.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And there's points throughout the series where he, like, tries to become more open about it. Like, there's one where he even, like, gets a position on, like, a talk show, and people just consistently refuse to take him seriously.
It's kind right. of a running joke. Yeah, well, I can see that being kind of funny, just with the way it's already kind of set up. I took a couple of screenshots of things I wanted to make sure I talked about, but I just remembered that. So I was going to look to see if I could find them. But one of the things I really liked was I did see that there were poking fun at different things and references to different things kind of throughout the text, which were, you know, amusing. I'm trying to remember what one of them was. So, there was a reference to something. I think it was Bob was singing something, maybe. I can't remember.
Anyway. I forget the exact one. One of my favorite ones that he refers to intermittently throughout the series is the Saturday Night Live sketch for Da Bears.
Yes.
Because he's in Chicago, and every single time he passes by Soldier Field, it's Da Bears. it's hilarious.
Oh, it was he. Is this the right book? Yeah, he did. Bob says, "Oh, this is the next book. Sorry, this is the book two, because it's Werewolf." And so he makes a reference back to
Werewolf,
and yeah. Young Frankenstein. And I was like, "Oh my god, I'm in love with this!" Just because I love that movie, though. So yeah,
the whole series is very referencey. It's kind of a Buffy kind of thing.
Right.
It's very kind of grounded. Like, it's just, Harry is just kind of one of us. It's kind
right.
of the whole deal with him. That's one of the things I really like about it. Like,
yeah.
You get the idea that he's looked down upon by the other wizards specifically because he's so much like us.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't take and, like, put himself in some sort of higher order or. He doesn't think well of, so there is an actual order, like an official order of wizards, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he starts out this book on their bad side.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
He's on probation from the White Council.
Right.
He's done bad things. The name of the thing? That's
the Doom of Damocles.
Which I think he even says is like, that's a bit much.
A bit over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's very tongue-in-cheek about them.
It's carried out with a ceremonial decapitation with a sword, so It's fair.
I mean, if anyone's going to be dramatic, it's going to be Wizard and anyone on something called the White Council.
The White Council, right, exactly. Like, if they're going to put themselves up on that, that's pretty funny. So
I have so many things to say about the White Council, but I can't.
But I can't yet.
Like, I need y'all to get to, like, book 12 or 13.
Oh, jeez.
No, don't say it. I know you're thinking about it. Don't say it. Oh, I gotta stick to this one.
I'm right with you.
All right. So, let's talk a little bit about the way Harry's magic works, or the way magic works in this world.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I like it so much is because it is it's an effort of willpower, which... For those of you who are Green Lantern fans, will know that that's exactly how they summon Green Lantern constructs. So it's very, very personal to me. everything he has to go ahead and put will into in order to go ahead and evoke. And it sort of kind of obeys laws of conservation of matter. You cannot take without giving something.
So, mm-hmm. There's always an exchange.
Equivalent is exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the things I really like about the whole series too, as a whole, because it's like, it's fantasy, it's very fantasy, but it kind of approaches its magic in a sci-fi kind of way. Like, it's got specific rules. This is exactly how magic works. It always works like this, and he sticks with it. Like, every once in a while you'll come across some super powerful fey creature who can, like, bend the laws, but it's always kind of explained that that's what they're doing, that these laws are laws.
Mm-hmm.
He's always kind of working within them, and, like, if you break the laws of magic, like, then it's sometimes possible to break some of them, but it carries severe consequences, so don't do it. That's why, one of the reasons why the council has the wardens, so that they can punish people who do that. And like, the number one rule is, like, no killing with magic, because magic is created by life, and so, like,
right. So to kill is to go against everything that the sort of magic stands for, or magic is supposed to be for.
Exactly, but it only counts for humans. Like, this is human law and human rule.
Right.
Once you start dealing with the Fae and the Seelie and the Unseelie courts, like, all bets are off.
Or the vampires. So we meet in this. We meet vampires. We meet Fae.
Yep.
Are there? And we meet Bob. And Bob is sort of an other. So Bob is in a skull.
Bob is a spirit trapped in the skull.
Right. Bob is a spirit trapped in a skull. I actually love that part about, like, I love that he's a skull. Like, I love that particular detail. So when you said in the TV show they made him a ghost, I'm like, no.
Just a guy walking around. I'm like, oh, like, come on.
No, like, it's so cool that he's just, and he can move, because he's constantly wanting to, like, leave and, like, go do things. And he's like, the last time I let you out, like, a whole, you know, fraternity went up in smoke or something like that.
Yeah, dear readers, Bob is obsessed with sex. Absolutely obsessed.
Yes, and so he can make potions too. So there's some alchemy in this too. So Dresden can make potions, and that's one of the things that Bob helps with.
Yep.
It's the potion making. And I'm trying to remember what the two potions were that he made. He made a...
escape potion and love.
And a love potion.
A love potion that he made with tequila.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Really happy. And he did it's always that tequila. Probably be a little bit trashy.
Yes.
And it was...
Yeah, well, and that's what's so funny. It's like, oh, let's make the love. And Bob pushed him to use, it's usually wine or something, he said. And so Bob pushed him to use tequila. Trust me, it'll be better. And it's like, no, nothing ever ends well when it starts with tequila.
Or it ends the best. And Dresden's magic is also very focused on the five senses, as you noticed in the potion making. He has to have something for sight, for smell, for touch, for taste, and for hearing.
Right.
Goes into every last one of his potions. They play with the notions of circles, magic circles as a summoning pact, and as a circle of binding, as a way to go ahead and concentrate your power. All these classic tropes that you've heard for years and years and years.
Yeah, to the degree too that one of the talismans that he carries with him is a ring that helps protect him. He uses this as a shield. mm-hmm. right, that goes along with the idea of circles and the protection of circles and such. And I, you know, that's part of what I really enjoyed about it was seeing the way that I love when I feel like something that I'm reading is taking things that I know and am familiar with and makes it its own. So it's this story sort of was good, I think, about taking those tropes or those approaches, those devices, and turning them into, you know, the Dresden File version of them.
It makes the world very accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which is why I thought it was great. One of the things I loved, one of the images I loved the most, was, okay, so Dresden in his investigation goes to see, and I can't, I'm looking at the list of the characters, the Madame Bianca St. Clair, who is the owner of the Velvet Room and a Red Court vampire. And he's just searching for information, and he brings with him folded in a hanky?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much in his pocket, a beam of sunlight.
I mean, because it's magic.
I know, but
it's actually the image of a beam of sunlight. We don't exactly know what it is, but it's not a literal beam of sunlight.
Yeah, my memory was that he had a beam of sunlight in his pocket.
And that's the same effect.
Yeah, I mean, it has the same...
It's ostensibly a beam of sunlight.
Right.
Let's not split hairs here.
Yes, exactly. Where he just, like, pulls it out of his pocket when she goes to, when he makes her angry. I think he makes her angry and she goes to attack him, right?
Yeah. He's provoking her into giving up some information.
And right.
She tries to attack him.
Right. And so he pulls it out and flashes it and reveals her true self, which wasn't any better for him.
Yeah, which is basically just a giant bat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a literal bat.
Yes. Flapping and gross and
yeah, bad. Covered in mold and
yeah,
all that other fun stuff.
Just disgusting. Yeah. But ew. I loved that whole thing about the sunlight and the way he used it and the way he used the magic. And mm-hmm. then the effect that it had on her, that she had this sheen of, you know, persona up about who she was, and that it just took one beam of sunlight to destroy it.
Absolutely. That's going to be a running theme that you see throughout most of the books, is that, you know, is Harry is clever, and Harry gets exhausted really quickly. Those are yeah. probably the two running themes.
Yeah.
But yeah, the carrying the beam of sunlight is just like that's the tip of the iceberg on you know, how Harry thinks his way out of things.
Right.
He's very good under pressure.
Well, and he said he had been saving it for something else too. Like he could use it in a potion or something. Perhaps I can't remember exactly what it was.
And but, actually, he never does that again.
Really?
In any of the other books, he never has that ability. And I believe it was said in an AMA, I think. Jim Butcher said that the reason he can't do that anymore is because in order to capture a beam of sunlight like that, you have to be truly happy.
Oh.
And because of all the stuff that happens from this point on, he's just never in that right headspace again.
Oh, that's just crushing.
That's another thing and... I like and hate about this series is Jim Butcher is kind of the Joss Whedon school of tug at your heartstrings by doing terrible, terrible things
yeah.
to characters you love. But he's even better because he doesn't kill most of them. Changes is like the pinnacle of it because it's called Changes for a reason. But he just, like, throughout the story, he does these terrible things. And usually he doesn't kill the character. It's just not like a Game of Thrones kind of a thing. He does worse things to them. And I love that. But I also hate it because I love these characters. But I love that he can make me hate that he did this to these characters.
Right, like the emotional response it evokes. It's good storytelling. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Okay, Isabella, you've been awfully quiet, and I've been the only one talking as a noob, so you have to give me something more here.
Why am I getting flashbacks to being in your class?
Because that's pretty much what I do in class sometimes. You talk. I have taken to like letting my students know if I'm going to out them against their will in front of class. Like today I was walking around to my groups and I actually said to two of them, like, by the way, you're helping me with this when we have the large group discussion. Isabella was of the era where I just like pointed at people and I said, you're talking now.